Also, my talk today is part of a larger research project, as Astrid already told you, on treatments of sexualized and gendered violence in contemporary theater and multimedia art practice. The project is motivated by the worry that this violence, the violence in the world, will be perpetuated if we do not find new ways to make kin, engage in alliances, and circulate affect. Such different practices of intimacy, nurture, creation, and proliferation I call queer procreation. And in the artworks I analyze, I look for the kinds of queer procreation they, the artists, invent, or the artworks invent, propose, and pre-enact, so that we can sort of mimic them in our practice. So I think that contemporary art has a lot to offer those of us who are seeking ways to tackle current political problems. And with today's talk, I turn to Ottobong Nkanga's art practice in order to probe those patterns of violence within the larger assemblage in which they participate, specifically colonial, racist, and ecological violence. And in this context, I will attend to the memories of matter, specifically to mineral self-documents. So what can that possibly mean, mineral self-documents? So first, the documentary part, that's easier. Nkanga's art draws on the documentary genre when she traces the socio-ecological context of exploitative extraction for materials of everyday as well as aesthetic use. She isolates the raw materials used in certain objects, researches their provenance, their material specificities, the socio-ecological effects of their extraction, etc. And she documents all that in a highly formalized way, as you can see. So these are works that I'm not going to discuss in detail, just to sort of to give you an impression. The previous one was from Taste of Stone. This is a sort of a sketch, or not a sketch, but it's a preliminary recipe for her work at the Documenta, Last Documenta. Here you see already sort of, you know, the work was sand, stone, landscape, strata of minerals. This is an exhibition view from Frankfurt, Porticus in 2015. The exhibition was called Crumbling Through Powdery Air. This is one of her drawings. So she also, I mean, she's really a very versatile artist. So just to give you a sense, this is very typical the kind of drawings she, or paintings she does. Installation view of a Chicago exhibit. So she clearly, I think it's one can sort of see that she draws on the documentary genre and also sort of is in the process of her practice, you know, goes through research and documenting all these different aspects that I just mentioned. But why call this self-documentation? So this is where the question of the self comes in. And of course, her presence, as you noticed maybe in the first slide, her presence is palpable in her art. She foregrounds her subject position and her body. Here, her body is present, especially in her performances. But I'm not so much concerned with the self of the artist. And I'm not even concerned really with the self as we commonly understand it, namely as a human subject. Rather, I think that her art creates the space for today we're interested in minerals, so the space for minerals, rock, raw ore, stones, etc., to document themselves. So mineral self-documents, to me, I want to understand this as minerals documenting themselves. Minerals giving authentic evidence of their experiences, their stories, their history, or what in the abstract, I don't know if the abstract was circulated, I've playfully labeled ore story. And in addition, I focus on our kinship with rock, on the fact that people and rock are physically allied or alloyed, and that their stories are intertwined. That our story always has a part of ore story in it, and ore story is always also our story. Which is another way of saying I consider people, Wisnakanga, as human mineral aggregates. So just the way rock usually comes in aggregate form. Through the lens of Nakanga's artwork, I will explore what it takes to, this is just random that I go through there. I will explore what it takes to materialize as kin in unseen and unheard of forms of kinship beyond anthropocentrism, such as human mineral aggregates. I will consider her installations and performances as a form of self-documentation, extending the meaning of self to include mineral as well as human mineral aggregates sharing or slash our story. So Adobong Nakanga's artwork engages with raw materials, objects, and environment that activate memories, thoughts, and feelings. And what is more, it attunes to how these material objects themselves remember, think, and feel. Such sensibility for material emotionality calls for a new culture of affect. It also requires attending to how materials themselves register, record, and communicate their experiences. Nkanga researches the variety of different uses that have turned matters, living things, or milieus into so-called natural resources, explores the multitude of cultural meaning connected to them, and acknowledges the violence involved in these processes. And then she creates new ecologies. In a way, this is maybe you can see this here a little bit, a new ecology. It's just a sketch. She creates new ecologies, alternative networks of exchange, kinship, and conversation, facilitating new modes of mattering, which include different ideas of value and novel occasions to listen and respond to the meaning making of matter. And plants, as you might have already noticed, plants and minerals are the main subjects or vectors of memory, exploration, and improbable intimacy in Nakanga's oeuvre. Her attention to plants and stones, her incorporation of them in installations and performances, and her use of rock and plant shapes in drawings and paintings is not meant metaphorically. Instead, her work reflects on the global movement under specific power relations of the mineral and plant matter used to produce all sorts of things. What is more, with her art, Nakanga creates the physical and affective spaces that allow for a conversation with plants and stones. Plants are world makers, and stones are experts in taking stress. As such, they have a lot to offer to those creatures who pride themselves on the faculty of language while flailing about with their destructive and defensive impulses. Nakanga explores specific material bonds, and today I will focus on aggregates, that are often born of violence, but that people might want to acknowledge and engage in with stones, better to learn from their experiences. Nkanga also specifically attends to the fact that plants and rocks participate sympoietically in the creation of art by furnishing pigment and medium. The major support media of visual arts include vegetal and mineral materials like paper, canvas, wood, marble, bronze, so that's a lot of copper, and the many metals indispensable for screen technology. Most natural pigment is metal-based. Some, like indigo, is derived from plants, some others from animals, and charcoal is a messy mix of high color intensity. From the pigment in paint, a ready thread of associations leads to the pigment in human skin and the role it plays in the construction of races and castes that has led to racism and other forms of othering with extremely violent consequences, and including, of course, the everyday violence of the global imposition of a color line and the division of labor. So this thread runs through all of her work, motivating a careful exploration of artistic medium, self-documentary form, politics of affect, colonizing identification, decolonizing self-identification, and metaphors. So not metaphors, but metaphors. And I try to pronounce this, of kin. Born in the northern Nigerian city of Kano in 1974, Atobang Nkanga spent her childhood in the mega city of Lagos and most of her teenage years in Paris. She began her art studies in Ile Ife, which is like Lagos in the southwest of Nigeria, and continued at the École Supérieure des Beaux-Arts in Paris and the Rijksakademie van Beeldende Kunsten in Amsterdam, as well as the Amsterdam School of the Arts. So she now lives and works mostly in Antwerp, but artist residency sent her to many places across the globe. And in particular, she spent quite a bit of time in Germany in 2013 and 14 as an artist in residence in Berlin. And this year, again, also as an artist in residence at the Martin Gropius Bau. She has held solo exhibitions at a number of renowned art institutions. I'm not going to mention them right now. She currently prepares an exhibition for Martin Gropius Bau in Berlin. And she received several important international prizes, among them most recently a special mention for, quote, her ongoing and inspired exploration across media into the politics of land, body, and time, end quote, from this year's Biennale in Venedig. She also received the Korean Yanghun Foundation Award in 2015, where the jury recognized the, quote, poetic, subtle, yet radical quality of her work. A protean artist, she creates installations, drawings, literature, painting, photography, sculpture, tapestry, video, and vocal music, and often combines these various art forms in her installations and performances. These works are site-specific most of the time, in the sense that she engages on-site with materials and themes characteristic to the time and space of the exhibition. And I will now briefly turn to Nkanga's installation Landversation, and then spend some more time analyzing her performance Daya Optasia. Okay, so this is a Landversation. For the 31st Sao Paulo Biennial, so Brazil, in 2014, Nkanga created the project Landversation. It consisted as you can see, of five round tables arranged in a circular configuration, each with a hollow center and an opening on one side. As the Sao Paulo Biennial's information material notes, the tables, quote, serve as the basis for an exchange between the artist, visitors, and a group of people who all have close, professional, caring, vital relationships with the earth. Among these experts who sit there were, and they change. So among these experts were geologists, housing and land rights activists, miners, archaeologists, eco-psychologists, farmers, gardeners, and botanists, as well as people who transform the land into products. As they sat in the hollow centers, pieces of rock, plants, soil, and various objects sat on the tables around them. Visitors to the exhibition were invited to approach the tables and start a conversation. And while the official description that I just quoted for you, as well as even some of the most thoughtful reviews, still tend to foreground the human dialogue between visitor and these experts, I want to strengthen a different understanding and practice and read the installation as a mineral self-documentation. So in the sense that a documentary doesn't necessarily have to be a finished object, but can also be, and I learned this from Astrid, an ongoing process of self-documentation that is mostly meant for the participants. In this case, I learned this from Astrid in the queer context, but in this case here, we don't even really have a technical recording device, but I still want to make the case that this is self-documentation. Because the setting of the scene is carefully, thoughtfully, and aesthetically framed to enable growing self-awareness of the land itself. So it's sort of the self-documentation in order to sort of figure out who one is, who we are, our stories, or stories. The installation stages Planthropocenes, this is a term between languages, the term that Natasha Myers created, bringing together plants and the Anthropocene, but she spells it with S-C-E-N-E. So the installation stages Planthropocenes and Mineralogocenes, if I might add my own word creation. It provides the space for a conversation with and among the rock, soil, humus, and plants, the critters, in Haraway's sense, that make this land and are cultivated there, and the things that humans fabricated on and from the land. So Haraway, when she uses the term critter, like everything is included from animals to plants to stones to bacteria to humans also. Everything is critter, sometimes even machines. Certainly the Planthropocenes and Mineralogocenes of land versation might at times slide back to situations where the plants and pieces of rock and other things on the tables serve as mere illustrations. So in a human-centered dialogue between expert and visitor. But it is more than worthwhile to use these scenes as occasions to cultivate the language skills necessary to understand and translate the language of mineral and vegetal self-documents. And ideally, it initiates a material conversation of the land, truly a conversation among the constituents that make land, a land versation, one that favors juxtapositions over hierarchical organization, an andversation. And I think one can see sort of the juxtaposition, and also, you know, that the humans are, you know, on the same level with what's on the table. Okay, so now I will turn to the the performance. The performance Dia Optasia offers a particularly complex self-documentary of human mineral aggregates. Maybe I'll try to go there. Okay. It combines an exploration of human rock relations with a meditation on colonial relations between North and South. The two are metonymically linked, since the global power differential has turned the South into a sheer source of raw material for the North, importantly including ores and other minerals. They are, of course, also metaphorically linked. Rock and stone commonly serve as metaphors for inertia, indifference, and passivity, or put positively, steadiness and strength. When applied to people, stony usually means dumb, insensitive, and obdurate. And against these hateful and strategic cliches, I think Nkanga's exploration of mineral matter reveals the phoric, that's to say, dynamic and agentic, as well as emotionally transporting aspects of stony presence. So in November 2015, Nkanga performed Dia Optasia for the camera of Tate Modern's Performance Room series. The performance was streamed live, and people from all over the world, whoever watched it, could write in with questions and comments for the subsequent Q&A moderated by the curator, Catherine Wood. And performance and Q&A are archived and can be viewed via Tate's website and the YouTube channel. Dia Optasia offers another example of Nkanga's careful consideration of the context of each installation and performance. In this case, she focuses on the technical specificity of the medium, namely the need for live editing. The camera does not simply record a performance completed independently, but Nkanga creates a performance in response to the specific media technical situation, integrating framing and editing devices into the performance itself, and also, of course, directing the camera. Performance and recording thus intra-act, to use Karen Barad's coinage of the term. So I'm going to describe the performance, and then I'm going to show it to you, okay? So bear with me. Two intertitles divide Dia Optasia into three parts. The intertitles evoke early cinema with its own editing strictures, and most apropos the subject of dumb stones, with its early cinema with its ability to communicate in silence. For the centerpiece, the camera moves slowly across a wall-sized close-up photograph of a rock wall that Nkanga took at a non-industrial mining site in Namibia, a place famous for its superb specimens of the mineral dioptase, and a region that was colonized by Germany, the Deutsche Kaiserreich, because of its very fertile land and the extreme richness, both in quality and quantity, of its ore and mineral deposits, mostly copper and various precious crystals. That are really extraordinary. So this colonization affected land and people, the entire mineral human aggregate. In the first decade or so of colonization, the Germans waged genocide against the indigenous people of the region, the Herero and Nama. And by the end of the 20th century, the mineral reserves had been basically completely extracted. Nkanga's photo shows the fissured rock strata as well as the cut marks left by the instruments used for artisanal mining. A soundtrack for the intimate exploration via the blown-up photograph of this rock serves a steady finger-snapping, a relatively high-pitched humming in Nkanga's voice, as well as a simultaneous English language voiceover spoken by Nkanga. At times, her hands, arms, and torso intrude and obstruct the view of the rock, throwing or smearing glittery mineral powder. Cut off from the rest of her body by the picture frame, these body parts solicit attention with their gestures, even when they demonstratively move out of the way. Each time they are gone, the camera seems glad to be able to focus on the rock again. This rock-centered scene is framed on both ends with in-person performances. The beginning piece only involves Nkanga's face and hands. In fact, the first frame of the video shows no human body but a sculptural piece, this is what you see here, made of ropes of copper wire, which resembles a basket and holds pieces of rock. After the sculpture, slowly and with a somewhat rocky movement, turns around its axis, two hands appear, disembodied by the picture frame, and take a diaptase crystal out of the copper basket. Place it carefully between both thumbs and forefingers to show off its blue-green luster, and slowly move it precisely down the middle line of the sculptural piece. The camera follows to reveal that the sculpture sits on top of Nkanga's head. The connoisseur can now identify it as an imitation of the Yoruba hairstyle Onile Gogoro, but even without this knowledge, one feels the contradictory pull of the sculptural piece, extending the height of the person and compressing the body with its load of rock. The hands stop briefly, then the piece of diaptase sits between the eyes of Nkanga's face, like a bindi strengthening concentration, while the fingers form something like a Venetian mask around the eyes. Then the stony focus steadily moves down the face until she carefully places the crystal in her mouth and swallows it. All of this is performed in silence with only some diegetic sound, like the swallowing noise and the clacking of stones as Nkanga removes them from the head basket. Then the camera zooms out and a dark gray screen slides in front of her face. It features the first intertitle in white handwritten letters reading, "From where I stand, I see you south." To the sound of steady finger snapping, the camera pans left to the photo of the wall rock, the humming sets in, and then the voiceover, layering the three sound elements like geologic strata. After the centerpiece, the camera pans again to the left and to another gray screen with an intertitle, this time in black letters and in Nigerian pidgin English, reading, "As I tanda so, my eye die torchlight una for north." The screen opens like a door onto a full body performance by Nkanga. She's still wearing the copperhead sculpture, now emptied of stones. Her mostly black clothes are still sprinkled with glitter from the previous scene, and she wears a large cardboard sculpture in the shape of a crystal in front of her groin, which the sculpture had already partially come into view in the previous scene. In each hand, Nkanga holds up a long stick. She stands in a frontal position to the camera and looks like a drummer in a marching band with her drum strapped around the waist and ready to go. Instead, she begins to sing with a hypnotic, modulated voice, a song in pidgin that sounds at times sweet and soothing lullaby, at others admonishing and warning lament. After a while, and without changing the quality of her voice, her hands twirl the sticks execute measured gestures with the metal spikes in front of her face, and then proceed rhythmically to stab the strap-on sculpture. The percussive sound of piercing cardboard make a drum of it after all. Nikanga here combines incongruous elements and gestures into an aggregate. The video ends where it began, albeit not without a shift in the reiteration, with her carefully placing the iron rods diagonally through the copper basket on her head and the camera lingering for a while in this unusual headshot. And the entire performance lasts about 10 minutes. Working through various forms of violence used against rock and against people in the name of rock, Daya Optasia explores what people can learn from rock, how they can acknowledge their kinship with rock and find new ways of materializing as kin. Rock boasts an extravagantly long experience. Stones and ore know what it means to be under pressure. They come from and coped with immense geologic forces, extreme temperatures, and steady momentum over vast amounts of time. More recently, they were subjected to extraction, persecution, exploitation, colonialism, classification, separation from their contexts, division, instigating one group against the other, such as iron picks prying rock or diamonds cutting metal, scattering, violent body modification, aka processing, and refinement into useful and aesthetically pleasing members of society. Humans and minerals make common cause in many ways. They make and destroy the planet. They surf and hurt each other. Both bodies and ore are subject to exploitation for profit. The performance modulates different body ore relations, from the metal hairdo via the focus on the crystal as drishti, the swallowing of stone, amplifying the fact that people ingest minerals as part of their regular diet, and inhale rock dust because of environmental pollution that is unevenly distributed across the globe due to power differentials, but also evoking the fact that humans metaphorically eat up precious metals. From that to maltreated or forcibly treated rock, bruised, stabbed, cut, pulverized, to the rivalry over the camera's attention, to mineral glitter, known as an ingredient in cosmetics and gender-bending fashion statement, wrapped on what could be a drum, could be a crystal pregnant belly, or a mineralized sexual organ, to all the way up to Nikonga's stony face. The voiceover of the middle part of Dioptasia contemplates our future. The first person plural here encompasses and cuts across human and mineral subjects. If they were ever separate, they have here formed a community by communicating, that is to say, based on the meaning of the Latin communicare, by sharing and pooling their forces, joining and slicing each other. The voiceover offers descriptions rich in material detail of the fractures that enable contact and communication. And I quote, hurting hands glimmer, made you shine and shimmer, shifting its lights to glitter, slowly you fade. Fractures can sometimes be identified. How do you see the cracks that happened? Would it be rough, irregular? And then there comes a, you know, a series of descriptions. I skip those. Our future will be, but still continuing the quote, our future will be, can be, definitely be with bruises. Uneven, hackly, splintery, earthy, brittle, sectile, malleable, even flexible and elastic. But will we be able to resist the stress? End quote. The second person and first pronoun to appear already oscillates or sparkles, shillert, between the human and the mineral. So made you shine and shimmer. After hurting hands glimmer, the you in made you shine and shimmer could refer to faces that shine from the use of cosmetic products containing mineral glitter, or it could refer to stones that shimmer after being cut and polished. The story thus might address rock. So the you could be rock. How do you see the cracks that happened? Seems at first directed at a viewer. So I feel addressed, but I can certainly imagine that many people in very different contexts and with very different experiences watching this video and very different memories also feel directly addressed. And I can also imagine that Nkanga had not only people in mind, but also asks the rock presented here with its cut marks and sediments, how do you see the cracks that happened? The iridescence of the second person pronoun thus performatively creates a first person plural, whose future is to live with bruises and under stress. Dioptasia embraces these cracks and bruises because they allow for transformation and communication. Cuts serve as interfaces for forming new alliances, for making uncommon kin, for entering into improbable intimacies. Our future is to live in and as composites that intention form identities across difference. Our future is to live as biomineral aggregates. With her practice of aggregating with, Nkanga builds on the idea of the composite community that Edouard Glissant champions. She also, what is more, she proposes to view each and any identity as an aggregate under pressure. And rock may communicate to people the ability to cope with the stress of existing in a composite community. Rock aggregates of mineral matter are resilient. They can carry much weight and take plenty of stress. For the title of the performance, Nkanga created a new identity by forging an alliance between different words. Dioptasia is a composite word. It's also an aggregate. It can be cut into dia, Greek for through, and optos, also Greek visible, evoking various irreducible visions of going through in the spatial and the experiential sense, and ways of seeing through something, with the preposition dia insisting on a partial opacity or the trace of the medium. Its extravagant suffix, dioptasia, makes it resonate with fantasia. Whether in the realm of music, where the genre of the fantasia originated, or cutting across the art forms and genres, like here, the play of imaginative invention characterizes Nkanga's work. Refracted through artistic imagination, things usually unheard or unseen can be heard and seen. Dioptasia thus functions as a technology for new ways of seeing and experiencing and feeling, a work of art that enhances the art of seeing. Together with fantasia, more words echo in dioptasia, such as certainly dioptas, but also diaspora and dialogue. Dioptas is a green copper cyclosilicate mineral, often ground up and used as pigment for painting. The relative transparency of the crystal makes internal cleavage planes visible, and specimens must be handled with great care because they are so fragile. With dioptasia, Nkanga attends to the diaspora seen and communicated through fantasy of the diaspora of scattered stone and scattered people. She cultivates various modes of seeing through and working through the violence we experience and commit, asking us biomineral aggregates to see through each other's eyes and facilitating a dialogue between mineral and human composites. Even the linguistic fracture line that runs across the performance between standard and pidgin English allows for improbable intimacy, although it might at first be experienced as an irritating exclusion. Unable to understand the meaning of the words, I nevertheless feel the hurt and the rage they communicate. I might want to refrain from commenting on the content of the final song because I don't speak pidgin, but pidgin is pieced together and compacted like stones from different languages. So one can always understand bits. To me, pidgin is partially transparent, like dioptas. I speak pidgin as much as I speak stone. The two diegetic sounds of the first scene, the mineral clicking and the human swallowing, constitute the scene as a human mineral aggregate, perhaps even a dialogue. To what extent can we understand the clacking as stones communicating? At the same time, we know that we let ourselves be fooled if we take Nkanga's swallowing at face value. The opacity of the self-document is pervasive, whether we are dealing with personal or mineral records. Nkanga's use of pidgin has the advantage that it highlights the possibility of misunderstanding, which always exists even when people supposedly speak the same language. Pidgin develops among groups who do not have a language in common. It also invokes the right to remain partially opaque that Glisson grants, especially the silenced subject. Yet that should not mean that communication breaks down among rock and people, or among those who do and those who don't speak a certain language or went through a certain experience. Even though the statement, "From where I stand, I see you south," has a hard time shedding its condescension despite acknowledgement of positionality and perspectivism, and the proposition, "As I tanda so, my eye die torchlight una for north," meaning "from where I stand, I send a light to you in the north," continues to accept labor despite the ironic twist of offering development aid for those struggling with enlightenment. But the intertitles are also clearly addressed at each other and form a dialogue. So even that fracture line, I think, produces some sort of conversation. But will we be able to resist the stress? Hacking English into pidgin is a way of resistance. Stabbing the mineralized sexual reproductive organ might be liberating. Her human mineral aggregates explore ways to cope with and communicate incongruity and stress. Making kin in precarious times both requires and strengthens resilience as traditional identities and dependable limits come under attack. Barely anything in the universe that the Nkanga encounters, attempts to reflect and creates is unambiguously healthy or thriving. Almost everything is broken or has emerged from the violent exploitation of people on Earth. Such damage permits, even favors, improbable intimacies. The bonds that join comparable and compatible but different memories of exploitation can take, as we have seen, the fabulous form of mineral self-documents. Thank you.